the old retail model is forever dead, don't ignore the future. Our vision and purpose is about reinventing retail. I think it's for many of concern. For me, it's inspiring. For our teams here, they're hugely excited about what the future might hold.
Hello, and welcome to How to Lead a Sustainable Business. I'm Alana Weston, and I believe that sustainability will be the next big disruptor of my industry. It has to be placed at the heart of business strategy if we're to address the climate crisis and transition to an economic model that is regenerative and just. The latest IPCC report demonstrates what we all know: there is no time left for incremental progress. Complete systems change is needed for us to grapple with the enormous challenges that face our planet and the people who live on it. In this series, I want to focus on the leaders who are driving that change. I'm looking at six different sectors where my guests are at the forefront of that reinvention. This week is very special. I'm joined by my friend, colleague, and longtime collaborator, Anne Pitcher. Anne has the bluest chip CV in luxury retail. She held key roles at Harvey Nichols and Harrods before joining Selfridges in 2004. Today, she's the managing director of Selfridges Group, which includes Holtz in Canada, Brown Thomas Arnotts in Ireland, and De Bijenkorf in the Netherlands. During her tenure, Selfridges was awarded Department Store of the Year four times, and in 2020, she won the Veuve Clicquot Bold Woman Award. Anne has been an invaluable partner to me on sustainability, from when we launched Project Ocean in 2011, right through to Project Earth in 2020. She's worked tirelessly to embed our vision and purpose across the four businesses, delivering on our plan to reinvent retail, putting the customer at the heart of what we do, and building a sustainable future for all our stakeholders. Welcome to the podcast, Anne.
Thank you, Alana. I'm looking forward to this.
So this is fun, interviewing you, having worked together for nearly 20 years. So much of our story is entwined, but I really wanted to ask you to describe how your personal sustainability journey began. Because when I look back, it was at a time when it wasn't mainstream in the world of fashion and retail.
Yes, I mean, I think I'll take myself back to those early days. Sustainability first came to our minds in a simpler way as we took the decision not to sell fur in our organization. That wasn't so much sustainability, it was a simple reaction to the way our customers were feeling and telling us they felt. Please stop selling fur, stop buying it. And all of our partners, we had to advise them that it was a decision we'd taken and an action that they wanted to join us with. Very, very simple at that early stage. I guess things evolved from that point.
And for you personally, taking on those brands and saying to them, listen, we're taking this position, how did that feel at the time?
I think it was a relatively simple, almost instruction, which doesn't feel good today, if you will. Some had a fairly significant fur business, but were able to replace those fur sales over a period of time. And the opportunity we took was to work closely with those who were more dependent on fur as a percentage of their sales to find a different lens through which they might bring different categories to life or explore different opportunities to reach a new customer. You know, Alana, you've always taught us to care about things that our customers care about. And this was the first time I think we embarked in a conversation that for some was a conversation to avoid, but for many a conversation that we chose to embrace, and it served us well.
And next was Project Ocean. As a retailer, how did you feel about taking on this issue on behalf of your customers?
Well, Project Ocean started with a very simple question you gave to me, which was, Anne, how much do you care about overfishing and the plight of our oceans? A chill swept through my body. And my response was, why? And so you explained to me how you felt our customers cared. And as a retailer, we should care too. And although fish wasn't a huge part of what we do and what we sell here, It was the beginning of embracing a conversation that would forever change the way we worked, and was the beginning of trying to embed sustainability in our business. But fair to say, Alana, would you agree, how we made it happen was the way we had brought great schemes to life in the past through the lens of one kind of group of people who were the marketing teams that brought this project to life across the various functions, the levels, and throughout the organization, but a fairly narrow group of people, in fact. But we moved on from there.
What we were doing was giving a voice to the conservation community. So the NGOs saw an opportunity to talk to a completely different audience than they had been before. And that was what was powerful. So I guess what we were doing, and Jonathan Bailey from ZSL would say the same, is we were helping them to sell conservation, as opposed to what I think some companies today do, which is marketing themselves through sustainability.
Yeah, no, you talk about the NGOs. There was the day where you said to me, I'd like you to come and do a talk to, I think there were 36 NGOs at the time. I mean, this is something that strikes fear into the heart of any executive. I mean, to that point, NGOs were to be avoided at all costs. In this instance, I found myself embracing a community of people from whom I could learn personally, from whom I could grow, and who helped us, who guided us and steered us on an uncomfortable journey in part. But you know, a campaign, delivered as a campaign, then had to evolve to become part of our culture.
One of the things that I found so interesting about Project Ocean was how our people embraced it. Can you talk a little bit about how you see sustainability and the culture of the company evolving together?
Yeah, I mean, I think in those early years, a lot of people said, why are we spending so much money talking about fish when most of what we sell is actually clothes? But actually, when we asked our teams whether they cared about the oceans and whether they had become concerned about overfishing, our teams began to tell us that they cared passionately about that subject and felt differently about us as an employer because we were showing how much we cared. And the spirit with which they entered into fundraising for that campaign, embarking upon personal kind of learning journeys, I think they supported that campaign in every part of their being. And as we began to anniversary every year on World Oceans Day, Project Ocean, it was actually our teams that brought that to life time and time again. And then you had another bright idea, Anana. Do you remember? Let's rule out single-use plastic water bottles. And that, I think, was one of the biggest changes in our culture, because there were the business leaders amongst us who said, well, hang on a minute, we sell 500,000 single-use plastic water bottles a year here. People drink water. What are we going to do instead? And we invited our teams to tell us how many different ways we might give away water for nothing or provide different means through which we could sell it, whether that was a tin, a carton, a glass bottle, a myriad of ideas. And actually, we suddenly became aware that there was a huge undercurrent of support from our own teams and customers for the work we were going, which propelled us, I think, further and faster than we might have believed.
It's amazing that internal energy that you get when you are a purpose-led business. And bringing that alive across the group has been something that you've spent the last few years really focused on. How have you been able to engage with all of your stakeholders, from your executive team to the brands to the customer, around your new vision and purpose?
I mean, I'd love to be able to say it was as simple as issuing that sort of dictate of we won't sell fur to here's a new vision and purpose, could you just do it then? But the reality is it is a long journey. Fundamentally, you know, we all need to know where we're headed. We need to know why we're headed there. We need to know how we're going to get there and what we'll need to do to actually achieve our ambitions. And I think in simple terms, that is a vision, a purpose, and values. And so what we started with, and you know, again, I referred to it as how to deliver Project Ocean through a very narrow group of people within the organization to embedding a vision and purpose across a network of 20,000 team members, and eventually, of course, our business partners and eventually our customers, was a very different proposition. So fundamentally, we created work streams across all of our banners, and from inside the organization, found some quite extraordinary people who were really the pioneers of our future. In the first instance, I think you called them the Green Warriors. And one minute there were 10 of them, and the next minute there were hundreds of them proclaiming their excitement and interest in the future. So working with those teams, we defined back in 2018, beginning of 2019, where we think we wanted to head, where our North Star would be. And that was the most inspiring journey. And any leader today, I think, learns more from within their organization and from the teams that they have that I think gives them strength as a personal leader, certainly gives me strength.
And one of the frameworks that you used, we call materials, models, and mindsets. Can you describe how you use that framework to create substantial shifts in the organization?
Well, I think sustainability is fundamentally, you know, a pretty boring word. It's often called ESG. It's often called governance. It's called an EP&L. I think way back in the day, you know, when we said we wanted to bring Project Ocean to life, we used our creative arsenal to bring it to life in a customer-facing way. Our job is to engage, as I said earlier, with things that our customers care about. So how did we create a project called Project Earth that would resonate? And so we chose those three lenses of materials, models, and mindsets to bring it to life for our teams, our customers, and our partners. And actually, it was a really novel approach. So through the word models, we began to explore the different models that are out there. These were the ones that we now refer to as circular models: resell, rent, repair, recycle. Our materials is our commitments. These are publicized deep commitments to the procurement of sustainably sourced materials, a deep commitment to carbon reduction programs, both of which supersede anything regulatory requirements or anything that's come out of the Paris agreements. So doing things that are the right thing to do in advance of being required to do them. And mindset is that mindset right there on the front of the building, a call out to our customers to change the way we shop and think about what you're buying.
And let's talk a bit more about the circular economy. I mean, it's growing apace. But what gave you the courage to rethink this business model?
I looked at myself. I mean, I rent, I repair, I recycle, I resell. And if I'm doing it, then everyone is. And I think it's, you know, way back in the day, do you remember when bricks and mortar retailers had to understand that they needed to be omni-channel? This is the same. Don't ignore the future. The future is that this is here and it's here to stay. And the old retail model is forever dead. And if you don't believe that, then I would suggest you go and have another look. So our vision and purpose is about reinventing retail. I think it's, for many, of concern. For me, it's inspiring. For our teams here, they're hugely excited about what the future might hold.
And tell me a bit about the customer. How different do you think today's customer is when it comes to making choices about how to spend their money?
I think it's important to look at today's customer and understand those things. And it's even more important to look at tomorrow's customer. So, you know, those of you that have got kids, look at what they're learning at school. I think that is tomorrow's customer. 85% of our customers will statistically tell us how much they care about the things we care about. And I think that's our special way of doing business here. We love creativity. We love innovation. We're bold. We like to move forward. And we like to excite people about what we have and what the opportunities are. And engaging in that conversation is what works for us. I think it can work for anyone. Don't be afraid of the future. Embrace it.
You've always championed creativity in our business. What's the connection between creativity and sustainability?
I think applying a creative lens allows you the freedom to look at how you might do anything in a different way, unbound by rules, restrictions, but it delivers something more than just the job in hand. And every project we look at through a creative lens. And I think particularly for sustainability, it's allowed us to excite our customers in a different way. So, yeah, whether it was to say that more people are killed by falling coconuts than sharks is one definition of it, but there are many others. And creativity and innovation lie at the heart of our values and the way we work here at Selfridges Group.
Because it has to be fun at the end of the day, and nobody wants to spend the whole time looking at spreadsheets, although they're pretty important part of delivering on your plan. As the MD of a group of iconic brands, your role is to deliver on the bottom line as well as to imagine a sustainable future. How do you manage to balance all of those objectives?
Well, I mean, thankfully, there are an amazing bunch of people here who love spreadsheets, me included, and who really believe they have a real role to play in supporting and driving a sustainability agenda, if not solely to ensure that we act within government guidelines, but also to ensure that there is no greenwashing. Mm. And I think to have the creative ambition and energy to drive a sustainability strategy forward, but to ensure that at every level it is robust, actually only ends up in complete trust with your customer and your people. And it's that word trust, which so many businesses lack today and would love to have. Our sustainability journey has come from the heart, has come from who we are. It's been within our organization for years and years. You know, your father said it's not the money we make, it's how we make money. And I think we have developed a sense of authenticity and trust around our commitment to our planet and our people that is respected and admired by our customers, our partners, and our team members. That's an amazing place to be.
It's something I think we're all very proud of. And it's a successful business too.
Well, I mean, you know, nobody should look at sustainability as a cost exercise. You know, one good way to look at sustainability is how much it can do for growth. And actually, carbon reduction, by the way, is a pretty meaty subject for how to save money these days. It's a different lens through which to explore how doing the right thing can add to the bottom line. I talked about the removal of single-use plastic water bottles. Actually, by providing a range of alternatives and by giving free water in a specially designed water fountain on the street, we were able to excite so many people around changing their habits around their use of plastic. And actually, as a business, we did so much better out of it. You know, we've had some difficult conversations with our suppliers. So we've had some very difficult conversations more recently around our desire to take precious skins out of our organization, our commitments to only selling sustainably sourced materials in the future. They're difficult conversations to have. And we've had some good ones though. And the good ones are where there was one particular brand whose business was 30% precious skins. We met quietly, we explored our own goals, and then they shared theirs. And we found we weren't too far removed. But what that brand chose to do, and I'm so proud of this, is they said, one thing you do well at Selfridges is you sell trainers. And we've never sold trainers before. And so we work really closely together to provide, I think, what was probably one of the most exciting trainer launches of the last 10 years. And smashed our precious skins targets. So I think there are ways you can work together. What I've learned with our supplier partnerships and those discussions about our sustainability journey is that rather than declaring our ambition and expecting others to conform, which was our strategy way back in, you know, 2004, now we look to share our goals with one another and find room to partner on something that can touch the minds of our consumers. That's the electricity, if you like, that is Selfridges Group, where we find those special points of agreement with one another and build something that's fresh, extraordinary, exciting and good.
Do you think that the industry is becoming more collaborative, not just with our business, but across the businesses? I mean, I think you sit on several sustainability in fashion roundtables. How have you seen that landscape change over the last few years?
I think there's a huge collaboration within the business, but largely in the supply chain. I think that's where people collaborate. I think customer-facing brands are collaborating less because they see one another as competitive. However, I think where there is collaboration, and we've explored some unusual things ourselves, I think that this is penetrating far deeper into the customer mindset. So you would probably find a collaboration between Selfridges and Oxfam unusual. And yet those collaborations are one of our most powerful. So I think we've always collaborated with music, art, culture, and things that people care about. And we've always found a very fresh set of partnerships. But I think if we're really to crack this, retailers have got to partner with one another to find a way forward. We do have probably much more to offer. And I say offer rather than much more power, but we have more to offer our partners and our suppliers in terms of what the customer thinks. What I see on many of the groups that I sit on is there's more of a focus on how and where things are made than there is on what the customer actually wants to buy. And I think if we could knit those two together, we'd have a stronger future.
As a female leader, you've set ambitious targets around gender pay and also diversity and inclusion. Why are these important areas of focus, and why is it so difficult to make progress?
I think it's really easy to make progress, and I'm absolutely thrilled with the progress we've made if you understand why you're doing it in the first place. And we care about people in our organization, and they like working with us because they know how much we care for them. Particularly, I think, in the last few years, people have begun to understand that. Beyond sustainability, the kind of business that we are to work for was becoming ever more important to people. And so we looked at our customers first, the most diverse customer base of any organization you can think of, all around the world. And we said, well, if we wanted to appeal to those customers, we needed to be the kind of organization that showed that they understood from within. It's been really exciting to explore diversity and inclusion, which of course includes gender pay. And I think the way we did that was we formed a team of people within who told us what they thought we should do. Within 6 months, every business within our organization is committed to publicizing their gender pay gaps, regardless of legislation and the requirement to do so. And the action plan that sits behind it, by the way, which is even more important than what the data tells you. Every business is committed to understanding the makeup of their workforce and how to balance it better. And these are the things that resonate so much within and are subliminal from the outside, but are reflected actually naturally. If you have people from diverse cultures creating your customer messaging, then you're going to have a more diverse set of messages. If you have a diverse group of people in your buying teams, you're going to have a far more diverse set of products. You know, it starts within, everything starts within.
And what leadership qualities are the key to driving reinvention in your sector and beyond, do you think?
Wow, that's a tough one. I mean, I always told my daughter as she was growing up, the best thing to do was look, listen, and learn. The leaders of today, and particularly in our business, must first understand that what we know as retail will never again be the same. And if you recognize that, you must also recognize you don't have the answer. Sometimes you need a little bit of help. So, for example, you know, I think we've done a good early job on the makeup of our workforce, on diversity and inclusion, but we had external help to set us on our way. I think when we embrace on any of our sustainability commitments, you know, as I said earlier, you know, to work with an NGO would have been something I would have kind of avoided at all costs. they have provided us with some of our greatest strength. They have reminded us that our position is with the customer, and that's our role. You definitely need help from the experts. I think for me, the experts that have provided us with the best support have not necessarily been the obvious ones. Mm. And perhaps what I'm saying is where you feel the area of greatest discomfort is probably the area where you should go first.
One of the groundbreaking things you did was to reflect sustainability targets in your team's compensation. How did you get to that point, and how difficult was that to bring in?
I think this goes back to, you know, how do you move from a small campaign delivered by a few people to embedding your commitment to a sustainable future across an organization of scale? And a really good way to do that is to ensure that everybody is clear on what their objectives are and that those objectives are attached to reward. Years ago, that was just EBITDA and life was quite straightforward. All of our businesses have now objectives, both short and long-term objectives, which are rewards-based and embrace the delivery of every element of our strategy. Four of them are common to all banners and sit around our commitments to sustainability. So our teams are as rewarded for sustainability as they are for, let's say, an investment plan to build a new department or a new store. It's been incredibly well received. Guess what? They're difficult objectives, and they are the ones that are delivered first. And, you know, they're not easy. As I say, they're challenging objectives. But they're kept on track because they're part of a reward program. They're followed through on a monthly, quarterly, and six-monthly basis, and we're all committed to delivery of them. This is the second year we've done it, and that is the way I think that all of your teams are committed, starting with the leadership, going throughout the organisation, that everyone knows why they're coming to work, what they're supposed to do when they get there, and how we're going to achieve our plans.
And now it's time for our quick fire round. So, what's your definition of sustainability?
Doing the right thing.
Is there such a thing as sustainable growth?
I prefer a sustainable future.
What's most important? Customer demand, legislation, or innovation?
Innovation.
What is your call to action for listeners?
Don't hesitate, just get on with it.
If you could reinvent one thing to halt climate change, what would it be?
Let's not ignore the truth.
Anne Pitcher, thanks so much for coming on to How to Lead a Sustainable Business.
Thank you, Alana.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please do take a moment to subscribe and rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. This lets us know what you think and helps others to find the show. This episode was brought to you by Selfridges Group and Intelligence Squared. The producer was Redzi Bernard, with technical assistance from Mark Roberts. I'm Alana Weston, and this is How to Lead a Sustainable Business.